Welcome to the Back Pain Podcast with Rob and Dave, the only show geared specifically to help educate you about your back pain. We talk to the experts to bust the myths, break down the science, and give you all the top tips for living pain-free. So, if you're driving to work, tidying the house, or even laid up at home in pain, we have something for everyone. Welcome back to the Back Pain Podcast, episode 32. Today we're talking all things core with Dr. Greg Lehman. Now, Dr. Greg Lehman is a physiotherapist, a chiropractor, and a strength and conditioning specialist. He travels the world talking about pain biomechanics and pain science. So this guy knows his stuff. Today we're unpacking the mysteries of the core and how it can relate to your back pain. The core is something which has become quite a fad term as of late, and a lot of people still don't know what the core is, how that concerns you, and whether that's going to affect positively, negatively, or do nothing at all for your lower back pain. So, if you've been told you need to strengthen your core, if you think your core might be your issue, damn, this is the episode for you guys. So, episode number 32, Dr. Greg Lehman. Let's talk about the core. Okay then, Greg, let's dive straight into this, mate. Help me out here. What is the core?
Nobody knows. It's this nebulous term. It's like, you know, probably from your rib cage down to your hips. So it'd be all the muscles, ligaments, and the bones. So it's kind of like your lower back, but not just the back. It would be the front and the sides. That's it. You call it your torso and hips, maybe. That's the core.
So it's not just one small thing that I should be thinking about. This is the whole of that middle region.
Yeah, hundreds of muscles. I've never counted, but more than five.
A ton.
Less than 600.
So the idea of this sort of, you know, one exercise or one type of core exercise, can that be right? Is that a thing?
This is the neat thing about exercise. Like, it has multiple effects. So there was a theory like 20 years ago to do one exercise where you just suck in your belly button, essentially, to try to target one muscle. And you can kind of do that. So it's certainly a thing. Like, you could probably do something to work one little muscle, but whether or not that is better than doing other exercises that don't do that, that would be the question. I would say it's not better. So let's just leave it at that. Don't worry about that stuff.
I like it. So where is this link then between core and back pain come from?
Yeah, so
where has this begun?
This is the idea. Like, your spine is, it started maybe 30 years ago by a guy named Bergmark. That doesn't really matter. And probably certainly people before him. And your spine is like, if you just ripped your spine out of your body, it's just a stack of blocks. So it's inherently unstable if no muscles are attached to it or anything like that. So if you just have a stack of blocks the way it's set up, it'll fall over, it'll buckle or crumble if you put stress on it. So people said, okay, in order to have a healthy spine, you need muscles and a nervous system and ligaments and that stuff. So they all need to work together to support the spine. That was sort of the idea. And then so some people expanded on that and said, the way we support the spine or keep it stable, like if you have a stack of blocks, these muscles all have to work together, you know, to stabilize the spine. But then what happened, like, through the years, there was this assumption that the spine can become unstable. And that's been like a massive theory for low back pain for 30 years, that the spine is unstable and that causes pain. And what's pretty, we can get into this, but no one's really tested that. No one's shown that, like, I would say, yes, the spine has to be stable, but it's also saying, like, yes, you need to breathe. But breathing is like, when you go to sleep, you're not like, I need to turn my breathing pattern on. You just do it. And that's what I would say, that's the way spine stability works. You just do it. You don't have to really worry about it. Right. It's just not, if you walk, for most people, you just walk. You don't think about turning on your muscles in the right order. And it's the same thing with the spine. You don't have to worry about it being unstable, unless there's some massive trauma or something like that. But that's different.
Well, thank goodness, because I can barely chew and talk or chew and walk even.
Yeah.
So it's this collection of muscles which automatically sort of creates that stability of this stack of blocks that is the spine.
Yeah. Yeah. That was the whole theory behind instability. And people thought that maybe what causes pain is that those muscles don't work together properly. That was the big theory. And so that, like, and different people had different takes on how that worked. Like in the 90s, you had the Australian saying, like, there's a couple muscles that become inhibited, meaning they don't really turn on when they should. Like they still turn on, they still work. They're not silent, but they're like a little late. And by a little late, I mean like 60 milliseconds late. Like it's not something you can think. And so, because what they saw was people who had low back pain, there was this delay, or a muscle in the back called the multifidus. Same thing. It would be delayed and maybe wouldn't work the same. So people said, aha, that's why you have pain. And then that's what people did, all these certain core stability exercises. And then what we kind of learned was, yeah, that might be true, but it doesn't really matter. You don't have to specifically train that muscle or fix those things. It's a red herring. It's like, we're focusing on that and it doesn't matter. And then other people said, I'm going through like the history here, this is more North America. They said like all the muscles in the back are important for stability. So you want to work the front, the back, and the sides, you know, not just one muscle. And you want to just train the whole core to prevent low back pain or injury. But again, what's interesting is it's still just theoretical. Like no one measured someone's, like a group of 100 people who were working or an athletic population or whatever, and measured their spine stability and then followed them for a couple years to see who got low back pain. Like you need to do something like that. But so it's weird. It's like one of these theories that just kind of took off and everyone just accepted it without like really testing it. So it's in its infancy. I'm not going to say it's wholly irrelevant. Yes, I will, but I shouldn't say that. But if you say it is really relevant, you're just as wrong. In fact, like the research is in its infancy, and that's how we should view it. It's just really a theory or a notion right now.
So the idea was that there was this instability, whatever that was caused by. So therefore, you need to create stability. You need to fix that. So that's where this sort of core exercise and, you know, exercise your core, strengthen your core. It's quite a faddy endurance word in the last 10 years. That's it. Yeah, create that stability with your core. I mean, something must be happening with that though, right? Because can that still help back pain?
Yeah, so that's where I'm still an optimist here. I'm all for doing spine or core exercises. I just don't think that they work because and so people have tried to measure stability. It's very hard and it's a mathematical process, which I couldn't do. I understand what the researchers are doing. And when they do measure stability in general, when we see people with low back pain, they don't have less stability. That's what's interesting. In some measures of stability, there's more, they're stiffer and there's more muscle activity. So it's not like it's a problem. That's it. But anyways, that being said, exercise, like this is what we've learned in the past 20 years. Exercise for your low back can absolutely be helpful for low back pain. And then if I were to really generalize, what's so exciting too is like, you probably don't need very specific exercises, meaning there's no one right exercise for you. You can do lots of things to help with your low back pain. It could be walking. Like I have a friend, Paul Marshall, he's Australian, and he's studied like very specific exercises for the spine, like planks and bird dogs and all these things, and compared it to like cycling just on a bike or walking. And there's no difference between groups and how people get better. The key is people just get active again, right? So that's what's fantastic. And so, there might be times where you don't do an exercise, like a plank or cycling, because it hurts your back, it aggravates you. So you just say, oh, I can't do that now, but I'm going to go back to do it again. I'll try this other activity for my back, like gardening. Gardening feels great, or trampolining. Great, do that. But you can't do a sit-up right now, but maybe in 6 months you can. So that's it. Just for physical activity to help with pain, which is just one minor aspect of pain, it doesn't seem to matter too much what you do, which is fantastic. There's other variables that are more important.
That's amazing. So rather than it being core exercise, helping the core, therefore creating, it was just the fact that it was some exercise, it was some stuff. Rather than being, so they were helping themselves out, but sort of not necessarily in the way they may have thought.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying you just do anything willy-nilly. There are times where like, so your decisions to help yourself with your low back pain might be, maybe I have to avoid doing this for a little bit because it hurts and it keeps flaring me up. But then ironically, there's a subset of people where they should actually do the thing that's a little bit aggravating. They might be afraid to bend and it hurts when they bend and they've been avoiding that for 6 months. Well, surprisingly, maybe you actually do the aggravating task and you get comfortable and less fearful about it. And then it carries over. So like, I'm not saying just do whatever you want and that'll get you better. there's still like choices we have to make. Like there's still an art here, but it's, I think the shift that we should be making is not making our decisions about our activity based on like changing stability. There's other reasons to choose activities. Yeah. So don't even talk about stability.
I'll never mention it again. Right. Well, look, you heard it here, folks, first. You don't have to put on lycra pants and do a plank for 20 minutes to activate your core. This is incredible. If anything, like a squat, if let's say walking, for example, let's jump on that bandwagon. If walking is something which is active and therefore you are naturally activating your core, what if you're should we be trying to overachieve here? Should we be tensing those core muscles? Should we be trying to contract and achieve a higher rate? Or is that actually going to do something worse? What should I be doing?
So this, I mean, this is a bit debatable, but there, so let's say it hurts when you walk. This is where you get to play around when you're in pain. And I play around with my patients, I guess, like, and it hurts when they walk or run or whatever they're doing. And so you just try something. You're like, well, let's try when you walk being really loose, like stop holding your breath, don't tense up, do something different. That feel better? Okay, do that for a little bit. But somebody else you might find when they walk, there's a certain position. Like I used to rock climb a lot and there'd be positions I would get into like with back extension that hurts and I wanted to keep rock climbing. So I actually braced my core. I did add more tension to it because there was a movement I wanted to avoid. So maybe when you're walking and it might hurt to arch your back, or running or walk going uphill, maybe for a little bit to avoid going into that sensitive pattern, you might find it helpful to tense a little bit. But but that isn't about stability, right? That's about like just avoiding something that's aggravating for a little bit. Does that make a sense, the difference there? Like it's not, saying it's inherently better to be more stiff. I'm just saying sometimes it's better to avoid something that hurts because then you keep doing more of it. And then after a few months, or a couple of weeks, I don't know, you don't even have to do that again. And you don't even think about bracing your core. It's just a temporary avoidance pattern.
So there's no fix all, contract this and you'll stabilize. Oh, I said the word. Stabilize your, you'll keep that spine happy. There's not that, you know, cookie cutter approach. This is dependent on how you're feeling.
In my opinion, yeah. And the harder question is like, do you always try to like avoid pain? Because there's a subset of people where, like for me, it's helpful. Like I do lots of gymnastics and running and stuff. And there's certain movements that aggravate me. And then it flares me up because I keep poking into it. Like I do too much. So I should actually back off. But then there's a subset of people who are already backing off a lot. And they might actually want to start walking, even if it hurts. Maybe just 1 or 2 minutes. And that becomes 3 minutes and then 4 minutes. And then they find they don't really have pain for those first 2 minutes. And then it only comes on at 5 minutes. So like that's where the difficulty is if you're managing your pain on your own. But it's not about the exercise. It's about poking a pain or not. One thing to think about.
So if you've got that pain and you know, you've been told to maneuver yourself, to move a little bit more. Again, let's use walking or like I said, a bit of gymnastics, a bit of natural movement through there. It's not just a case of holding that so stiff that you can barely move in order to complete that activity. It's selectively giving yourself a bit of bracing around those painful moments.
For sure. Like, it's like, I don't strength train a lot. I should do more. But when I do, I actually, keeping a very stiff neutral spine was ingrained in me, not flexing a lot. That's what I naturally do. And it aggravates my back. And so ironically, like I let my back relax. I don't let it really relax, but I actually flex it a bit. So I use my muscle activity just to avoid aggravating movements. That's it in a nutshell. It's kind of what people would do if you had no therapists, no research. I bet most people would figure these things out on their own because they wouldn't have these rules about how to move. They'd say, fuck, it hurts when I do this. Maybe I shouldn't do that for a bit. Why don't I try it this way?
I like that. Yeah. Go on, imagine that world.
yeah, exactly. Pretend that we don't exist. Healthcare providers.
Keep listening to the Back Pain Podcast.
Yeah, except for that.
So tell you what. So I'm out on my walk, and I know that as I, let's say I'm climbing over a fence or something like that, or I'm going up a slight hill. Let's use that. That's nice and easy. I know this aggravates me, but I want to get to the top of the hill. How hard should I be tensing? Should I be contracting? Is it enough that I'm making a noise and I'm having to go like that? Should I be blue in the face? What should I be doing?
So again, it depends. Most people don't have to tense. I mean, your core isn't really working that much there. It's your hips and your legs that are working. You don't need a lot of muscle activity. But again, if it's for symptom modification, you just do whatever makes you feel better, right? So a good way to move is like as many different ways as possible, and you have those options, and you just figure out the best way for you to walk up that hill with less pain. Or pain that you can tolerate. Yeah, so that's it. So I don't know how much it would be. It would depend on the person.
Of course. So we've blown apart this idea of like an underactive core, of a lazy or weak core.
Yeah, that doesn't have a lot of support. I mean, research is weak in this area where they measure like a group of people who have low back pain and those who don't. And in general, you'll see a little bit more muscle activity or stiffness. People already tend to be stiffer and have more muscle activity when they're in pain. Not really something you need to add for the majority of people, I'd say. It's worth trying again if it feels better, but don't get caught up in like one rule that there's a right way to do it.
Absolutely. And this is something which, and again, it's whether it's a natural response to pain, that natural guarding against pain, or whether this is a societal thing that's drilled into us. When people are in pain, they often walk into the clinic, or you can probably spot someone with bad back pain a mile off, because they often do move in a very rigid, guarded, stiff, mechanical way. Either due to pain avoidance or because they're worried about that re-aggravation of pain. So if we're thinking about prevention of pain, how can I phrase this best? How are we going to prevent that pain from re-aggravating? So we don't want to be as stiff as a robot as we're walking, or we want to gradually ease a bit of movement back into us because we're still working that core, even though we're not constantly contracted. But we're just edging away from anything which re-aggravates, anything which reignites that pain, I guess.
So preventing after someone's already had pain?
Yes, if you're sort of during a flare-up as such.
So again, you have to make that decision. Like if someone's bracing and tight and not moving a lot, you have to decide, is that actually helpful? Because for some people, it's helpful. And it's helpful because it lets them exercise or do activities they love, and it gets their pain manageable, and they know in a few weeks it'll go away. So if you make that decision, don't worry about it. It's a helpful compensation. But then if they think, or you think, or working together, you guys make that decision, like, you know what, this is unhelpful. It seems to be making it worse. The pain's sticking around. You keep having these flare-ups. Then you have to make that call. You know what? It's probably worth to like, you know, challenge these what we call movement behaviors and try something else, like try walking with a looser spine, or try lifting, you know, like just flopping over and touching your toes, and don't worry about flexing your back. So you got to make that decision in there that it might be the right thing. But there are times like if you have an acute radiculopathy, meaning like this type of sciatica where there's a disc injury, and if you have more leg pain than low back pain, there are times where you probably don't want to flop over and touch your toes. Like it will really flare you up, and it's acute and instantaneous. So you got to make that decision that it's safe for you to do it, and that it's no longer helpful to do that avoidance. So that sort of call, and then you want to do it here. So then you start doing these other movement patterns and getting comfortable again, moving all kinds of different ways. There's a famous physio named Louis Gifford, who's since passed away. And I always say, like, I quote him, but like, and I'm misrepresenting him a bit here, but it's turned into something in my head. We should move like thoughtlessly and fearlessly. You just shouldn't have to think. That's the idea. You should be able to trust your body. And so I'll say to my patients sometimes, like, you'll start feeling better when you have as much faith in your spine as I do. That's like,
I
believe in you. I believe in you, and you'll get there. Like, you're strong, you're stable, you're not frail. It's built for this. You can adapt. It hurts like mad right now, you know, but it can change and you can do better. So that's sort of the idea. And it segues into this idea that pain is like not just biomechanical. It's influenced by so many other factors, right? Like fear and worry and all that stuff will fan the flame. It turns that little nugget, that little flame into like a bonfire.
A lot of people are going to want to hear that now, Greg. That's fantastic. I like that. I will be stealing that for Monday morning. Yeah. Thank you.
Go ahead.
Well, look, that brings us on to posture then, because we're talking about, you know, you should be able to move thoughtlessly as such. So this idea of the perfect posture, you know, you should be standing up erect all the time, moving around in one simple plane, that then sort of blows that out of the water as well, surely.
Oh yeah, I absolutely. Like, and we've known that for a long time. Like the relationship between like posture and people getting pain in the future is really poor. It doesn't help. There aren't postures that predispose you to pain or injury. And that goes along with this movement optimism idea. Like, we have these joints in our body which allow you to move a bunch of wonderful and different ways. So you should do that. So like when I'm sitting, I don't know if people can see me, like right now my feet are up on my chair, my spine's fully bent, I'm tucked in, and I'll move around all over the place. Sometimes I'll sit up straight, but I don't think that's inherently better than slouching. I'd rather do all of them. That's what we're built for. You could argue that.
I like that. So we've got this ability to move. Use it.
Exactly.
Perhaps it gets drilled into us from about 5 years old when we get stuffed into a desk and we stop going upside down on sofas, playing on monkey bars, doing forward rolls off the settee, all that sort of fun stuff. We stop using those lateral and that side to side movements, round movements. If you ever follow, this is going to sound like a weird statement, however, if you've ever followed around a 5 year old, which I often do with my little nephews, they're impossible to keep up with. They're upside down, they're side by side, you know, they're wiggling around. I'm knackered within 2 minutes trying to do the same movements they would do because I just don't do it day to day.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's too bad. We should probably add more of that stuff. But no, we vilified posture for so long. It's unfair. It just, and I think it came on because of aesthetics. Just like, we like the look of people who stand up straight, like if you're a model and stuff like that. And sometimes you feel more powerful, you know, when you're up straight. There's those ideas there. And it's from like the military. Posture might matter for like performance, right? You know, as we age and you want to reach something up high, like on your top cupboard, you do need to have like good spine mobility so you can arch backwards a bit, and shoulder mobility. So posture is important for doing things, but just because you're hunched over, it doesn't mean you're more likely to have pain. It doesn't predispose you to having pain.
Yeah. So it's about being able to do it, not staying in that good posture. So you need to be able to have the ability to stand erect, to stand up tall, but you don't have to stick there the whole time.
If that's your goal, right? Like for a long time, I was just a runner. That's all I did was running. And then the last 3 years I've been doing gymnastics and rock climbing where suddenly I have to raise my arms over my head, right? Mm. And my running for 10 years, like, compromised my ability to be a good gymnast because I hadn't raised my arms up because I never won a race. So like I would just have my hands down the whole time. And so functionally, like, there's things I can't do that I want to do. It doesn't make me more prone to pain. It's just purely function. I want to do back handsprings and a bridge and stuff like that, giant swings.
Fantastic. Now we're talking. Well, look, you touched briefly there on that sort of posture and its aesthetic impact and, you know, the desirability of that in society. Because when we talk about core, if you, it's very faddy, it's very hot right now to have core workouts in magazine. Well, who reads a magazine anymore? On Facebook and stuff like that, let's face it.
Yeah.
And it's normally accompanied by the archetypal picture of a six pack. So, if you've got a six pack, does that mean you've got a good core? And do you need a six pack to have a good core?
So most people have a six pack. You just can't see it. That's all it is. So like,
I knew it, Greg. I knew it was in there somewhere.
It's there. Oh yeah. Just starve yourself for months or years and you'll see your six pack. I mean, again, like I think having a good core is overrated. I think everyone has a good core. I know this because you get up and walk around and you don't crumble to the ground. I don't think it's something you need to worry about. It depends on your task. Again, like if you have like me, I want to do double backflips on the trampoline. So when I go up in the air, I try to pull my knees up and over my head as fast as I can and hold it there. But inertia is causing my knees to go back down. So I actually do lots of sit-ups, which people think are bad, and leg raises, which people think are bad for the core. But it's absolutely necessary for what I'm trying to do because I'm trying to get into a little ball and inertia wants me to be straight. So if that six pack meant that your abs were very strong, which it doesn't always, then that would be a good thing for me. But for other people, you don't need, if you just run and walk, you don't need a lot of ab strength. So it depends, again, it depends on the task. So again, like abs are, and I'm not again, I know a lot of people like, you'll see lots of articles saying, don't do a sit-up. It's the worst way to train your core. It's not. It's actually one of the best ways to train the front of your core, which is the muscle called the rectus abdominis. It's excellent for that. You will get stronger if you do those. It won't make you stronger going backwards, which is part of the core, or sideways. You need to do stuff for that. Like a deadlift is a good exercise for your back muscles. But it's not a good exercise for the front of your core, which is your ab muscles. Right? A side plank is great for your sides.
Funny enough.
And it's okay for the front, but it's not as good as a sit-up for your front. So it just depends what your goal is and things like that. Aesthetically, six-pack, just starve yourself. The six-pack is the euphemism that's created in the kitchen, not in the gym. You need a little bit of gym to get some muscle bulk there. But you really just, and it's created from your parents. You just need to distribute fat differently. Put in your ass, not your stomach. That's sort of
fair enough. I think a lot of people out there will be happy about that. Could this be part of the reason why sit-ups have been so vilified then? If people have just been doing sit-ups for core and forgetting the rest, or where does that come from?
I'll tell you why. So sit-ups have been vilified for a few reasons. People, there's this idea that came out there that the core is about like resisting movement. So the abs in the front, their job is to stop you from arching your back rather than flexing your trunk. It's just one of these theories, which isn't true. We see, again, it depends on your task. Your abs will flex your trunk, and flexing your spine in some activities is really important and you need to do it. Again, if you're a rock climber, you want to be able to flex your spine under certain positions. If you're a gymnast, you need to flex your spine under load. So that was one area where sit-ups got vilified because people said they're not functional, but they certainly are. Like they will make you stronger. And if you need stronger abs for whatever it is you want to do, then it's a reasonable activity. The second reason they became vilified is because when you do a sit-up, when they measure the stress on the spine, there's lots of stress, which isn't inherently bad, but your spine bends a lot. And that means your discs are bending. And there's a theory, just a theory, I don't believe it's well supported, that if you bend your disc, it might cause disc herniation. And so people said, well, if you do sit-ups and you bend your spine a lot, therefore it might increase your risk for disc herniation. Again, just a theory. I don't, we could talk about this for 25 hours, but when you look at the totality of the research, I don't find it's that bad, you know, because doing a push-up will put just as much stress on the spine as doing a sit-up, but no one vilifies push-ups. The reason is because the spine flexes more when you do a sit-up. So if you think that flexing the spine is bad for it, then you would argue don't do sit-ups. I don't think that flexing the spine is bad. So I think sit-ups are a reasonable exercise for most people.
I like it.
Yes, again, like everything, there's probably a subset of people where they're not ready for sit-ups right now. It aggravates them. It flares up their back. It's a goal exercise that we would build toward. So I'm not saying just hammer out sit-ups today, but plenty of people can, provided you slowly increase your sit-up dosage, just like anything. Running isn't bad, but if you don't run and you ran a marathon tomorrow, well, you're an idiot. Same thing with doing a 1,000 sit-ups tomorrow. You got to slowly ease into it.
I like that, Greg. So the idea of the goal exercise. So they're not bad themselves, but don't, especially if you're sitting at home or in the car or wherever you are and you're listening to this and you've got back pain right now, it's probably not best to go and do 100 sit-ups tonight. It's not going to magically heal your pain. But as a goal exercise, what a great terminology. Again, I'm nicking that for Monday morning. As a goal exercise to graduate to, it can still therefore help later down the line with creating strength and power in the way that you need it.
Especially if those are things you want to do, right?
Mm.
It depends. It depends on the task. If you're a rock climber, especially a boulderer, like it'd probably be better to do planks because that's where you work your abs in a really long position. And you do a lot of those static holds in rock climbing, right? But if your goal, like me, is to do backflips, that's where your spine flexes under load, it's probably better to do sit-ups or leg raises and things like that. So it depends on what your goal is.
So goal dependent, okay.
That's how you choose exercise. What do you want to get better at? All right, let's build you up to do that.
I like that.
Easy peasy.
So Greg, in that case, and I think we've answered this, but look, I'm going to make you re-say it anyway, because I'm like that. So should we stop doing core exercises then? Should we just stop bothering with them? Or do they have their place?
So the vast majority of people who aren't elite athletes, who aren't doing like the most demanding things on their spine, they could probably get away with not doing core exercises. They could get away with doing, I think you'd be better off spending your time doing squats or hopping. Like if I think of the general health benefits or walking or some endurance activity, you know, rather than spending 20 minutes just doing core stuff, I don't think it's something that most people need for good general health, right? There's, especially if you don't want to exercise, exercise is important as we age for bone density and for loss of muscle mass and for fall prevention. And so doing a bunch of core exercises wouldn't be the best use of your 20 minutes twice a week. You'd be better off doing like lunges and squats and deadlifts and walking hard and spending time with your friends in nature. Like, so that's what I would say. If you have a limited amount of time, choose the biggest bang for your buck, and it wouldn't be a plank or a side bridge or something. That'd be good.
Absolutely.
Just be the best way.
Plus, you know, they're awful. they hurt. I like that. So if you're looking for bang for your buck, for time and energy put in, for gain out, walk across a muddy field, get out there with your friends, I like hopping. What a fantastic idea.
Hopping's needed for bone density. That's the thing. Daily hopping, it seems. That's
daily hopping.
The femur. Yeah, bones are weird. It's like low level of load, like it's only a few minutes, and then you stop because doing more than that is necessary. Like you get diminishing returns, and then so definitely for women hopping, and men for lots of, I mean, everyone loses muscle mass, but I think men is more for some reason. Strength training seems to be better for bone density in the spine. Yeah, but that's separate from low back pain.
indeed, yes, yeah, we've gone off course. This is good. This is all good stuff.
No, so the point there is like choose exercise for health for your goals 20 years from now. Don't choose it as like your goal shouldn't be I need to improve my stability or stiffness or my ab strength or core strength. It should be how can I be healthier? And then choose the ones that you enjoy doing so that you keep doing them. So like we have to reconsider our targets, right? Like, why do we want to do this? So that will help you choose your activity better than like, I'm going to make my transverse abdominis fire better. Or I'm going to stiffen up and learn how to brace my core and keep it in neutral or whatever the idea is.
Absolutely. So I think we've well and truly dispelled this image of the core exercises being this silver bullet, this magical thing that's going to shore up, secure your spine, stop it from wobbling off itself, and instantly cure your back pain. It's more about movement. It's about progressive loading. It's about being a human more than it is about one type of plank or another type of side hold to get you out of trouble.
Yeah, that's my opinion. Although I would say doing those core exercises are still one option. It's just not required, I would argue, for the vast majority of people. Does that make sense? It's an option.
Absolutely.
You just don't have to. Yeah. So if you love doing them or you're really interested in it and you've seen like a magazine article or some videos, go ahead, give them a crack. But don't think that you're in pain because you haven't been doing stuff like that. Where you've had a flare up because, oh no, I've stopped doing these spine exercises. That may not be true. Like, give yourself a break. And if you hate them, then give yourself a break. You don't have to do them. There's plenty of roads to roam.
I love it.
Or I'd skin Fantastic. A cat, but I need a better expression than different ways to skin a cat because that's pretty disgusting. So I just talk about roams.
Pretty vivid. Yeah, we'll go with roaming.
Isn't that a horrible expression? Like, where did the hell
many ways
come
to skin
from?
A cat?
Yeah, what the fuck? Can we do like, there's lots of ways to plant a rose? I don't know. Like, I need a new one. Roads to Rome, what else is there?
What are the different ways of skinning a cat? That's what I'm most intrigued about. If you know more than one.
I know two.
Yeah, the quick way and the slow way. Greg, I think that brings us neatly on to we'll leave that there on that bombshell. Greg, thank you so much for joining us this evening and morning for you.
Yeah, thank you.
Greg, the people out there, they've listened to you now. They want more. Where can we find you?
Oh, I have two websites. One is greglehman.ca. No, I have three websites. That's funny. That's like more for clinicians and blogs and research and stuff. And then I have my own tiny clinic website is movementoptimism.com. And then I have one, because I don't really think of it as mine. It's just something I put out there. It's called OA Optimism. It's for people with knee and hip osteoarthritis or knee and hip pain. It's just like a series of educational videos and exercises and things that people can do. So... And then Twitter, greglehman.ca or Greg Lehman. Yeah.
Fantastic. We'll put all of those links up in the show notes as well so people can find you and find out more. I'm very interested in the knee and hip OA chat. I know we're the Back Pain Podcast, but we might be able to do a little bit of migration, especially for that.
Well, this is what I would do. The routines you see for knee and hip osteoarthritis could also be low back pain. Exercises. That's the great thing about exercise. Like, you just fundamentals will carry over a lot, and basics go a long way. It's just the consistency. If you're someone who responds to exercise,
yes,
and not everyone does, and that's okay. Don't beat yourself up. There's lots of ways to help. Exercise is just one option. That's okay for some people. You don't have to though.
So there are people, just to tug at that thread here, I know we're supposed to be finished, folks. Stay in the car, listening to us, bear with us. So there are people that won't respond to that same exercise.
When you look at the research on exercise and low back pain, it's just okay. There's a subset of people who it's great for, and there's a subset of people where low back pain is way more complicated. You guys know that. And guilting people by saying it's your fault that you're in pain because you're not doing your exercises isn't fair. It can help for people, but they're not paying because they're weak or tight or all these things. Like I don't think that people have to exercise to get out of low back pain. I think there's lots of different things, and that's with almost every disorder or pain condition. It's one option, but there's other things that people can do. It's one of the easiest ones to prescribe. That's why we all do it. And I certainly do it too. But if someone told me I want to run again, I'd be like, well, that will be your activity. It's not classically an exercise for the spine. Or if they say, I want to garden again, I'm like, let's use gardening. as your exercise. I want a bowl. Let's do that, right? Whatever it happens to be. So I don't think that people need to, I think a lot of people have been messed up because they've been told, unless you do these spine exercises, you'll be screwed and you'll never get out of pain. They're not specifically told that, but you know, like that's what we hear when you're, and I think that's unfair. I think there's lots of ways to help.
I'm sure that a lot of people listening to this really needed to hear that, Greg.
We need to say that more. Yeah. It's just because we've confused like our good advice to tell people to exercise with thinking that they have to, and the research doesn't support that. It's a way, and some people will exercise for a whole year and they won't get any better really with their low back pain, you know, because we're not addressing, again, you guys, but pain is multifactorial. So there's other things that you can do. And I swear, and I know there's a subset of people who the exercising, not that they cause more damage, but the stress of trying to exercise and feeling guilty about not doing the exercises as much actually contributes to more pain. Because they might do them for 6 weeks and they're no better. And then they back off and they're like, no, it's my fault I have pain because I'm not doing them again. I'm like, no, just take a exercise holiday, right? It's not working for you. Let's do something else. Let's find something else that can help you.
I like it.
I love exercise holidays. I always give my patients vacations from their spine stability exercises.
I'm like, exercise dude, you've done holidays, them for
4 months. You've done them for 4 months. It's driving you nuts. Let's stop. And I have people who search me out because of that. It's always nice. I'm like, I thought you might tell me that. I'm like, yeah, don't worry. You've done enough work. If the exercises were, if that was the right route for you, you would have been feeling better.
I suppose, if that was the right route, they wouldn't be through your door. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's try something else. You don't need some new exercise. You need to stop doing them. Give yourself a goddamn break.
Fantastic. That's right, folks. Give yourself a break. Drop the guilt. If it's not working for you, it's time to find something else.
That's it.
Fantastic. Greg, I'm going to stop taking up your time. Thank you so much for joining us on the Back Pain Podcast. This has been Greg Lehman. Is there such a thing as a core? Yes. Is it useful for back pain? Possibly not. Thank you, mate. Okay, guys, over and out.